Hey, Starburns listeners, Ben Schwartz here, and I'm here to plug. Here I go. I am in a new movie with Noelle Wells on Netflix. It is called Happy Anniversary. It is out right now. All you have to do is basically go on your computer or whatever device you want. You just click on it, and there we are. It's me. It's Noelle Wells, and it's the story of a couple on their three-year anniversary. They wake up, and on that moment, Noelle's character is done. She feels like she doesn't think she can take any more of the relationship. And throughout the course of the movie, which takes place in over the course of 24 hours, you flash back to all the good, the bad, everything that encompasses this relationship to try to find out if these two actually will stay together or if they won't stay together. It's right now. It is a romantic comedy. Me and Noelle Wells, written and directed by Jared Stern. Netflix, Happy Anniversary, Starburns, lots of words, ending with exclamation. When's it gonna end? It just did. Another tag, and now it's done.
Hello, everybody. I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line, embarrassing stories of first-time performances. We take your favorite comedians and we brought them here for them to tell you about the first times on stage and what they thought was actually going to be entertaining. Today's guest has been featured on Seth Meyers, Stephen Colbert, Matteo Lay.
I'm so excited to be here.
How you doing, Matteo?
It's a lot of fun.
Right. Liza Minnelli.
Yes.
Do you worry that Matteo Lane is getting the same split personality problem that you have?
I've dealt with mine for years.
Yeah?
And it's worked.
Okay.
I remember the first time I went on stage.
Yeah, what happened then?
Well, I used a fake name.
Yes, Liza.
Because I didn't want people to think it was easy, because I was the daughter of Judy Garland.
Right, you have to earn your own way.
And they booed me.
Oh.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I would totally believe it, though.
Yeah, and that is true. The first time she went on TV, she used a fake name. They introduced her to someone else. And then they're like, actually, it's the daughter of Judy Garland, you know?
Wow.
I know.
I should have known we would ask Matteo about his first time and we would get Liza's first time.
Right.
I know. It's really, maybe it is a split personality, but I truly have a lot of fun doing that voice.
Liza, what are you excited about the holidays? Do you celebrate?
Well, I've moved out of New York.
Okay.
And I've dealt enough with the cold.
Right.
And so I've hired someone to bring in snow in my Malibu ranch. And I hired my sister, Lorna, to do all the work.
Okay.
I hate her.
Right.
That sounds like a great holiday coming up.
Oh, it's fun to watch her do all the work.
Right.
Do you drink?
I see you on TV here and again still.
Yes.
You drink a lot.
Well, I'm in AA, an Alcoholics Anonymous.
You
but
go.
I guess you're not supposed to say that, but nothing in my life's anonymous. So,
right.
But everyone's an alcoholic.
I guess you can say it if you're drinking also.
Who is this?
Right. Matteo, do you remember the first time you were on stage? Wouldn't that be something he goes, no, sorry, guys.
Yeah, no, I don't remember, but bye. Thanks for having me.
It was 6 years ago that you started doing comedy, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
It hasn't even been that long.
No, it's been it feels like it's been an eternity, and then it's also not been that long. But I've also had like a weird history of performing, so maybe that's why it feels like it's been so long. But.
So when you were first on stage doing comedy, you were already on stage doing other things.
The first time, I was working with this cabaret group that for some reason was also a group that was associated with like a children's after school, like theater musical. Anyways, the guy who was running the show, him and like his boyfriend sort of ran it. His boyfriend was the drag queen. Now, apparently they were both tops. And I guess the way that they figured out who was going to, like, the guy would buy the drag queen dresses, and then if he bought him a new dress, then he would bottom for him. I mean, that was their relationship. So, of course, I'm like, sign me up! And it was a group of terrible cabaret dancers. I loved them. I mean, we were wonderful. It was so much fun. But terrible cabaret dancers, terrible drag queens, and we only performed every weekend at gay strip clubs in Chicago. They would say, yes, you come, you can perform, and we'll have, you know, it'll be in between strippers. And
Why?
Oh, I loved it. The reason I did it is because my friend Jilly at the time was in it as well, right? And she would put on the wig and do hairspray, and she was so great. And she was like, they're looking for singers, so if you want to come, you can do it. And so I emailed him and said, hi, here's like a clip of my singing and blah blah blah, and he was like, yeah, just pick your music, Bob. They just needed someone to sing while they were changing.
So okay, now I've heard about this from Keith from straight clubs, where sometimes, and I don't even think you go to these things, maybe I heard it from somebody else, but there is sometimes where they put a comic up in between or some kind of act up in between, and everyone hates it because you're not really there to see it.
The gay crowds liked it when the musical numbers came out, like the drag queen who kept saying, I have a 50-50% chance of getting on RuPaul's Drag Race, which then so do I. and we're on season 10, haven't seen her. But the queens liked it because, you know, we were singing Hairspray and doing musical numbers that were like from Cabaret, like really popular. They didn't really like me because I was like singing Mariah Carey, like B-cut, you know, stuff. Like, I was singing Forever, like the 1994 failed single of Mariah Carey. She sang live once at Madison Square Garden.
Let's hear a couple bars.
Until forever and ever, my darling, forever. Can you imagine seeing a stripper and then that? And, you know, we were in the basements that I always say this is Anne Frank wouldn't hide in them. They were so gross. And it was like the strippers with this one Polish stripper. He spoke no English and he had a tattoo that said never give up. Too late. And the, you know, drag queens powdering her face for the 100th time. And then we're just drinking in a basement. Oh, that's the other thing is we would drink to the point of blackout and then go on stage and perform. And this one girl went up and she was so drunk that she, when she was getting ready, she's just by standing, she fell, hit her head. They brought her backstage. She's screaming and crying. And it was so dramatic. And then one of the girls is like, oh, she has a lump on her head. It's bad. And then, you know, she goes, that's always been there. So, I mean, it just was a mess. But I did it for like 2 years. I loved it.
Did you get paid well?
We didn't get paid. We just got to perform. We got drink tickets and free drinks.
Wow, for 2 years.
But it was every weekend. So I would draw during the day. And then at night, I would do this show. And we would perform at like Atmosphere. If you're in Chicago, you know these places. Atmosphere, Hunters. We were in Rockford at a place called like the I or the 8 or something like that.
Are people in Chicago going, oh, wow, really? That one?
More like, what's like, you should go get checked. You should see a doctor.
So you're not nervous. You wouldn't be nervous doing this singing because you know how to sing.
Correct.
And they're not your songs. And so there's nothing to worry about, right?
Yeah, singing, it's like you can kind of just hide behind the sing. Right. Yeah, you can hide behind the song.
There's not a lot of vulnerability. And
it's pretty vulnerable. It's a different type of vulnerability. I mean, in comedy, now I'm like so used to doing comedy. Like comedy, I feel strong. But singing is like you have to, singing is almost more embarrassing to do. That's how I feel. I'm a little more embarrassed to be a singer.
Do you throw out some little jokes and quips? When
no.
You used to
oh,
do-
God, no. Okay. I would come out and like literally just start singing Mariah.
So what
or Barbara Streisand.
Like Star Search.
Yes, I would. And your next performer, who had 3 and 4/4 stars last week, he could never say Christina Aguilera. Christina Aguigagagagi.
Yeah, he never checked ahead of time what the name was.
He was drunk.
Yeah.
And what tells you, hey, you know what? I'm going to start telling jokes.
When I saw Joan Rivers, I was in college and I saw Joan Rivers for the first time. And I was like blown. I'd never seen. I always say this, and I've been saying it lately, but it's like when I know all these comedians who are comedy nerds, they their whole life, they're like, I'm going to be Carlin. I'm going to be Pryor. I'm going to be the, because those guys spoke their language. They spoke to them, but gay men, I just didn't have anyone speaking my language. They weren't talking to me. So I didn't get what the interest was. And then I saw Kathy Griffin and it changed my mind. And then I loved it. She was totally talking. I felt like she was talking to me. And then when I saw Joan Rivers, I'd never seen Joan Rivers, and she did this like 2007 Bravo stand-up special. I still have it on my phone. Blew me away, pencil down, couldn't believe it, fascinated.
You're like, my balls do sag.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of her jokes where she's like, my vaginas drop. I woke up 3 weeks ago, and I looked down, and I said, why am I wearing a bunny slipper? And why is it gray? I mean, I just like, I don't know. I just never heard anyone use comedy like that. So from her, I had wanted to do comedy. And then my friend Anaïs was dating this guy named Marty DeRosa, great comedian in Chicago. And he was just so nice to me. I saw him do stand-up every once in a while for like 6 people. But to me, I was like, this is fabulous. Like, you know, and I was like, I could do that, you know. And I just asked him one day. I didn't know how comedy worked, but I said, could I do comedy? Because he ran a show. And he's like, yeah, you can do
three minutes. I'm going to stop you for a second because I didn't know what comedy was before I got into it or before I started speaking to comedians. And I remember watching them going, oh, all this is coming up. They're so articulate because I thought it was just, hey, guys, I was thinking about this today, because a lot of times, you know, they start with that. Like, I just broke up with my girlfriend yesterday, and I was like, you processed that so well.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and I'm entertained, and you just got sad yesterday. This is amazing. And it took me so much to understand that the way I felt, they had to work like a whole year for that 5 minutes. I thought, you know, and I used to heckle because you feel like they're talking to you yeah. so much that you're just like, I totally know that. And no one's talking to you. It's still a show.
He's asking, why is everybody so rude?
Yeah.
Yes, I do know these places.
I know you. I just hate so much when you do shows and people say, I'm helping the show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you're not. You're not writing with me at coffee shops. Get out of here. But yeah, I was the same way. I watched and thought, but I actually watch. I'm such a narcissist. I watched and I thought, I could do that.
That's fair.
Tell jokes and be funny. I could do that.
Because the people who do it so well make you feel like you can do that.
Yeah, they made it look pretty easy. Yeah. And I saw some shit comedians in Chicago, but I also saw some really good ones. And Marty happens to be a great one. And so I sort of was like hooked up with the right person. And it really does, things really just do fall into place at the right time. It's bizarre. I mean, I remember going to my first open mic and bombing, but the first time I did stand up at his show, it went really well.
How prepared were you?
I had a week to prepare jokes. And so I just was, you know, this is when I was in Chicago still. So I was surrounded by my family, and my family's very funny. So I just talked about the things my family thought was funny. The Duggars were really funny at that. I think I made a joke like, the Duggar family's vagina looks more like a train station or something like that. Because yeah, they're like 22 kids or whatever. Right. I'm like, that's not a vagina. That's a train station. So it's stuff. That's the only joke that comes to mind right now I remember.
Do you remember that first step on stage? Did you have your opening line already ready? Or were you like, I'll just start with this topic?
I don't know that I remember. That's kind of crazy. Well, when I did my first show, Marty's show was in Old Town on LaSalle, right across from Zany's at the Old Town Pub, I think is what it was called. And the show was a sex toy show. So like there was a bag full of sex toys and then audience members win sex toys. And so there were two actual audience members and then about 32 members of my family came, including my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles. They just wanted me to talk about them. I had 3 minutes and 32 members came. 3 minutes. And they all showed up, lined up.
What was their response to it?
They just laughed. I mean, you know, and then are like hypercritical of everyone else.
With their arms folded like it's a contest.
Kind of, yeah. That's Italian family. You're auditioning on something you didn't even realize you were auditioning for. Whether you're accepted or not. So my family is very critical. My family thinks, and if you're Italian, you know this. My family thinks that they are making you feel better by criticizing everything else around you.
Oh,
it's like, that person sucks. He's not as funny as you. They're my friend and I like them. We do not, these people are not the enemy. Everyone's an enemy to you people.
Do you find the second time you do stand up to be more difficult because 32 family members aren't there?
Well, yeah, because then I thought, oh, I'm hot shit. So right. I killed. And so my friend Marty, there was an open mic and I was like, I'll get up at the open mic. And I did an open mic and it was I did the same material to silence. And then I didn't understand like, oh, these are all comedians and they're all friends with each other and they don't like new people. And it was silence. I did it to a room of silence. It's like painful to think about. And the only person laughing was my friend Anna East in the back. So I do one joke, literally room of 50 people, silence. And you would just hear, ha ha. And it was at Shuba's. That's where it was.
And you don't know.
Shuba's open mic.
And at that moment, you don't know if the one laughter is worse.
I knew it was my friend Anna East. And I was like, well, this is not going well. And then I got up and I said, wow, I bombed, you know? And then Marty's like, oh, don't worry about it. And I was like, in my head, I was like, I'll get him back. And then I did shows at gay bars because this guy knew that I was doing comedy once for gays. Like, that's enough. So they're like, they had me do comedy at this place called Sidetrack with Adam Guarino. It's so funny because then when I was doing it there, I would get so nervous. I would drink and I don't even know what I was talking about. But again, more family members came. And then my Uncle Mike went into the bathroom and came out and told my Aunt Cindy, he goes, the bathrooms are real clean here. My Aunt Cindy's like, well, what were you expecting? Semen dripping from the walls? And I was like, we should have the show be them. They're funnier. Also, my blind grandpa and my grandma in her house coat are here. So that's funny.
Did they know that they were coming to a bar? Do they frequent bars? Do they hang out?
No, 2 80-year-old Sicilians do not leave the home. My grandmother has the air conditioning on in January in Chicago. She doesn't leave the home. So she had her house coat.
Why did you ask them to come?
You think I asked them? Have you been with an Italian family before? You think I told my mother. I said, Ma, I have a show at Sidetrack. It's next Tuesday. Do not tell the family. 3 hours later, my Uncle Mike, well, I'll be picking up the grandparents, and then Megan's driving, and then Kelly's coming, and Brian's going to be coming from there, and your Aunt Cindy's taking your mother and your father. Your sister and Joe are going to come. We're going to get Vince to come over. Aunt Lisa's in town. She'll be the... 3 hours later.
I was getting
a do not ask them to come because I'm like, okay, it's enough. And then all of a sudden the guilt Sunday night is, when's the next show? And I'm like, there are no next shows. You people are not coming because they come in. They're an army. They come and then they expect you to talk about them.
Do they talk back during the show?
Well, they want me to talk more about them. My Uncle Mike loves being made fun of. And to please him, when I did Seth Meyers, they give you like, I'm supposed to do 5 minutes, right? So I had gone through my material pretty quickly. So I had a minute left and my last joke was only about 35 seconds. So I was like, all right, I'll throw in an Uncle Mike joke. So I made fun of my Uncle Mike on the spot for Seth Meyers. And his when he saw it, he goes, all right, if you need more material, just let me know.
I'll keep doing ridiculous shit.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's my family. My grandpa. This is an Italian family. You know Sebastian Maniscalco? The Italian, you know, whatever. So Sebastian Maniscalco is from the same part of Chicago we're from.
Okay.
My grandpa, this is so Italian, calls me up because my Aunt Cindy loves Sebastian Maniscalco, sees all his bits, blah, blah, blah. It's all about being Italian. My grandpa feels so bad that my Aunt Cindy likes Sebastian Maniscalco, calls me up to say, you're still my favorite Italian comedian.
Oh, my God.
I was like, you people, I don't know what you think, how fragile my ego, like, it's fine.
I had a slice of pizza today, son, but you're better.
Oh, the guilt, the Catholic guilt is just so, yeah. But my family, I had to stop telling them that I was doing shows because if you tell them, they all come. They all come. They all show up. And they think they're helping. And they are helping. I mean, I love them. I love my cousins more than anything in the world.
What do they heckle if they do heckle?
They just, you know, they'll laugh extra hard at your jokes. Stuff like that.
I know that to some people that sounds so weird. Like, right. Oh, sorry, Mateo, at your comedy show, we came and laughed extra hard. But...
I know. No, it's actually a blessing. I love it, but it's also hysterical to me.
To me, it sounds like you came to the playground with your mom and you told the jokes that, you know, maybe... a couple people won't laugh at, and your mom's like, he's so funny.
But imagine instead of my mother, 80 other people behind her.
Nudging the other two people in the club.
Right. I mean, the club was just, it turned into a Pomaro get together. It was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just talk about being Italian. They'll like that.
Do you have to perform for family on holidays?
No, first of all, my family, there's no family there's no reunion, family reunion with my family, because every day is a family reunion. So there's never a day where it's like, I'll never understand. They're like, we're doing a family reunion this year. I'm like, isn't that every Tuesday? When we're all, the family's all together, I'm the least funny. I sit my cousin Brian and my cousin Megan, Aunt Kelly, and my Aunt Lisa, and my Aunt Cindy. Are like they're the funny ones. Like my cousin Megan.
Do they know it too?
Oh, they're all performers. Actually, I was talking to this guy who lives in Italy. He's from Naples, where my family's from, and he goes, "I think all Italians are actors, and they don't know it. Everything is for the stage, and it's true because like our favorite thing is to make fun of my Uncle Mike and how ridiculous he is when he brushes his teeth. So every Christmas,
how do you guys know that?
Oh, are you first of all when he brushes his teeth and all right. So my grandpa will be like, if someone like my Aunt Lisa's in town, right? She doesn't live on the same block as us. So when she's in town, my grandpa will be like, Megan, show Aunt Lisa how your father brushes her teeth. And so my cousin Megan stands up. My cousin Megan is 32 years old, a beautiful woman, a mother of two. And she's like, he leans over and like there's foam coming down. And then my Aunt Cindy's screaming at her. She's like, use the Dixie cups. And he's like, my father was in the World War and didn't need Dixie cups. And neither do I.
We also have a toilet now.
Yeah.
Things are different.
It's wild. My Uncle Mike's insane.
Do they still make that? Did you get in trouble for adding an extra line?
No. Oh, Seth Meyers, they were the nicest. They didn't give a shit. They were just like, do whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were great.
Because late night, you have to submit your set. You can't change words. Yeah. They'll change them for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but then when you're on there, I mean, once it's going well, I feel that the comedians that do best are just in the moment. So to me, that was in the moment. It felt, I'm so great. No, but I mean, like, it just felt natural to put that in there. So I did. And I wasn't cutting their time and I wasn't swearing. So they didn't care.
Awesome.
You were going through your phone for an upcoming show to look at old things that you've done. And you came across something that you've done 6 years ago. I would love to hear one of your old, one of your old tracks.
All right. I'm literally playing this, not even knowing what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to fast forward. This is when I was at a place called Town Hall Pub in the middle of Boys Town in Chicago, a show called Entertaining Julia every Sunday, hosted by the Putterbaugh sisters and Beth Stelling. It's no longer there. Okay. But also, I'm sorry. My family is so wild that they're not even here and they derailed the conversation to make it about themselves when I'm supposed to be talking about my first time on stage. So this would have been like a month or so into doing comedy. I literally am going to press play.
Okay.
I put it in the middle of my set. I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm really embarrassed right now.
Anybody, it would almost went into a British accent for some reason, but no one's British on that show. I'll do it anyways for fun. So, Liza.
I'm talking about Liza Minnelli.
If I could interview anyone on the show, one of the top three people, which is also kind of rude to say. Why would you say top three? Why wouldn't you say the number one? That's rude. She's right there. Just lie. She just lied, but you know, you don't watch Liza Minnelli, but it's fine. No, I appreciate it. Liza, if we could have one of the top three people here, it would be your mother. Well, a lot of people don't know this about my mother, but she was so funny. She was just so funny. Mom, I was marvel. I'll never forget the first thing Mama said to me. She said, Liza, call an ambulance.
I still say that joke, which I got from my friend Pat Powers and Rob Lindley.
What do you think when you hear that?
I'm talking about Liza Minnelli.
Do you?
I mean, very natural. That's me talking Sunday night dinner at my Aunt Cindy's.
Is that you being comfortable?
At that moment, I'm comfortable, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm talking, yeah.
Do you?
I remember being really nervous, and I never knew what to walk on stage with. I think I walked on stage. I used to walk on stage and say, I'm a drag queen, and then I'd be like, I'm not, but I just want to say it's making me more interesting. That's not even a joke. That didn't even make sense.
It'd be like if I said, I'm an astronaut.
Right, and then it's like, I'm not. There's one comedian in Chicago who has a joke like that. She's a big girl. And she has a great joke. She walks on stage. She goes, I'm a Chicago police officer. And then she's like, yeah, I'm not. And it just the way she delivers it is hysterical. Kristen Clifford, that's who her name is. So I don't know. That would have been me. I was talking about Liza Minnelli.
Well, I remember when we first had you on Keith and the Girl, it was because Keith saw you opening for Mike Lawrence's show,
mm-hmm.
and he came back and he's like, oh, this guy's opening line was the best. He caught me right away. I didn't understand what he was doing, and then boom, he got me. Do you think we can get you to do that?
Oh, I don't even, I would come out and say, oh, mio babbi. No caro, mi piacebe. And then everyone claps, and I'm like, thank you so much. That's a true story of how I came out to my dad.
I love it.
I also had to lower the key because my voice is not warmed up today.
I was going to say.
That was lower?
Yeah. The key is, oh, mio babbi, I think. That would be the high note. Well, maybe it's like an F.
He'll work on it and be right back, you guys.
Yeah. Pardon me. Well, that's just funny because when I was doing like JFL and doing all the bigger shows and I would have to do that, I was the only comic like...
Right. You're really doing warm-ups.
Yeah, trying to get my voice. I'm like, can I hit the F? And you're like, okay, got it.
Well, upstairs earlier today, we heard somebody practicing opera. I wonder if now they think we're messing with them.
Oh, I heard it and I said, is that me? And I was dead serious. I thought you were playing like an audio. I was literally just like a muffled like, I'm like, oh, that's me.
We should do that now every time he comes into the room, just a faint operatic voice in the background. Right. He just goes, I feel at home for no reason. I don't know why.
In opera speak, can you record, hey, shut up? And then we can play it when they're loud upstairs.
Sure. Hey! No. Yeah, but this is the first time I did this show. It was such a big deal because I remember a comedian here found out that I got it. I had no idea who you guys were. I was so new to comedy. Yeah. And a friend of mine was like, how did you get on that show? Like, she was like jealous. And then I came on and I don't know. It's so funny that I was so impression heavy in the beginning. I was very like singing and impressions and Christina. And I mean, it was like, I do equate it to like, this is going to sound so gay, Mariah Carey's whistle tones. She didn't need them to become this great singer. She had great music. She was beautiful. She was great. But the extra high note got everyone talking. Mm. And so I knew that if I did these things that people would talk more. And I, the very first time, the, like, I got swept up in the community very quickly because the...
You were, if I remember correctly, you were that year's Keith and the Girl...
Favorite guest.
Favorite guest.
Yes, yeah. I won. Yeah. Oh, yes. I remember I was at the basement of the Creek in the Cave. It was the 6 o'clock mic, Friday night. You know, you're doing 3 mics a night and you do it every single night building up to get to this moment. And if you're called in like the first 2 groups, like you're making it, right? So for that, I was very fresh and new. No one knew who I was, and I was like, I just need, it's the Mariah Carey high note. I need these people to just immediately remember me because no one's paying attention.
Sorry, this is just for laughs, you said?
No, this is just an open mic at the Creek in the Cave.
Okay,
just introducing myself to the community of comedy. Right. And this is with, like, I remember Allison Libby and Mark Norman and Evan Williams and Michelle Wolf and Peggy O'Leary and Eli Sayers. Like, that was the Tim Dillon. Like, this was the group I came up with, you know. So they're all in the room. Suba. And, you know, so I walk up and they say, Mateo Lane. No one knows who this shit I am. I walk up, everyone's talking, and I start going, oh, mi babi. And, I mean, the room... It was like, I mean, the room just went silent. Everyone's eyes went huge like this and just absolutely locked in on me. Like, what is this guy doing?
Were you nervous during that time? Were you like, I got the high note?
Oh, I knew that I was going to get them because then I said, that's how I came out to my dad. And just an explosion of laughter. And I was like, from then on, I was comfortable going to open mics because people were like, you're that guy who did this. You're that guy who did that. You're that guy. So and then I was doing Britney and Christina and like just anything loud so people would remember me. Right. And so I don't even think I had like a joke. You know what I mean? Like I just had like these like literally lighting off fireworks just so people would like pay attention to me. And then slowly, because I started getting stuff, I had to catch up and figure out material. I really did things kind of backwards, but also it was literally like getting thrown 1,000 pieces of a puzzle and trying to put it together as quickly as possible.
And I'm not saying you don't have to hone your skill, but is it like being born with a superpower?
In what way? With a comedian?
Both being able to sing. Yeah, with also helping being a comic.
Well, the singing, I mean, the fact that I'm a singer and a comedian, like, you know, a comedian, you're really just supposed to use any means necessary to get to express yourself and to get the whatever is going to get you the laugh and whatever is going to push you forward and push you forward artistically. You use it to your advantage. I mean, so many people have done. I know people who used to do backflips on stage. So as long as I could find a way to make singing not annoying and funny, then I would use it. And right. It's wild now on stage. When I do like 45 minutes, there's almost no singing. I mean, it's just now I'm all material. Like I have the pendulum swung completely the other way. So I was watching old clips of myself last night. It was so impression based. Like I watched this one clip. I had this old bit.
Are you cringing during this?
No, I'm actually looking at like, oh, wow, that's refreshing. Mm-hmm. I should be doing these jokes still. Like there was this one, it's not even a joke, but it was just like, literally one time I was talking about tampons with my friend in Washington Square Park. A woman in her early hundreds walks by smoking a cigarette. No joke. Literally goes, are you talking about tampons? I know a thing or two about tampons.
It's been 50 years since she used one.
That's what I'm saying. Uh-huh. Then what did she say? I
went to China. They don't have tampons in China. Who knows what my grandmother did? Probably just sat in a tub for 7 days and said, don't come in.
And walked away. And I thought, that's funny. Why shouldn't I do that? But I think New York is so, like, Chicago is very, like, you can always tell a Chicago comic. It's a vaudevillian show. I mean, they come in and the impressions and this and their big personality. I mean, that's very Chicago comedy.
I got to say, the people that are coming into our studio now from Chicago, there is something in the water over there.
Or the deep dish.
Yes.
Illuminati's. Yes.
It is, I mean, they're on fire. Fire.
So talented.
They are not only talented, they follow up with hard work, mm-hmm. and they're just rising, rising, rising.
I'll tell you why. Chicago outside of New York City.
I'd love that you can tell me why for everything.
Is that horrible? Am I annoying? Sorry. No. I'm like the Long Island medium.
I love
Do you know
her.
What I mean? Who's someone's child? You know, just, the husband's like, I just want to bowl, you dumb bitch. Please let me bowl. Chicago outside of all the cities, New York, number one for comedy. L.A. is great for comedy, very different than New York. It's just a different monster, right? Outside of those two cities, because they're industry heavy, Chicago is the greatest city to do comedy because you can, the system is the same as New York. You have the trains, you have the buses, you have your neighborhoods, you have your open mics, multiple open mics a night. You can do 3 open mics a night in Chicago. You have smart people, you have a hierarchy, you have clubs, you have alt rooms. It's a mini New York. And it's big. I mean, the community's huge. So when I went to starting in Chicago was wonderful because it allowed me to get the closest thing to New York, but there's no industry really. So you are allowed to just experiment. I mean, there's so many wonderful experimental comedians in Chicago. Candy Lawrence, who she lives in Los Angeles now, blew my mind. I mean, just so different than anybody else you ever watched. And when I came to New York, I realized, oh, it's very joke-based. The open mics are 2 minutes long, and let's move it along.
I feel like this is kind of the kind of inside information. If you're even thinking of doing the arts, this is good. And I would want to know from you, now that you're a little bit removed, but you're going back to some of your older stuff, like I could still use this. If it's somebody's first time, what do you recommend about
lube?
And know how to sing opera.
And know how to sing opera. If it's someone's first time doing an open mic or a show or New York or Chicago.
If it's somebody for the first time on stage, what do you recommend as an opening line? Like what to keep in mind for your opening line?
Well, I think naturally people will, when you want a young comedian, it's always, the first set is always the biography. This is who I am. This is who I'm from. This is why I'm weird. I look weird. My family's weird. You get a sort of mini biography. And as time moves on, like my first set was like, I'm gay. I'm Italian Mexican. I have a weird name. My brother's gay. My Uncle Mike's weird. I mean, that's literally my first 5 jokes. You know what I'm saying? That I did for JFL and everything else.
I kind, without thinking about it, I kind of did the same thing. The first time I went on stage, I outed people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. The Clay Aiken. But now my set is right now, the current 5 minutes I'm working on is British Bake Off, Rachel Ray, Oprah, Lindsay Lohan's Instagram, and messy white women.
I just came for the first time by a gay man. Thank you, Mateo.
You're welcome.
I love all those topics.
Oh, yes.
I love it.
But do you see what I'm saying? You evolve. So I don't need to explain. When I walk on stage now, I just say, hi, I'm obviously gay. And I move on.
Would you recommend doing the biography thing first so you can get a handle of?
The only thing I could recommend is before you go on stage, go to open mics and watch people. I think something that that I learned very early on is you have to accept you're not going to get better until you watch people. Be patient. Watch people. See what works. See what doesn't. See how people approach the audience. See people's mannerisms. Think of it like music. Where are these people waiting? How are they timing themselves? How are they standing? How are they holding the mic? How are they addressing the audience? Does that person look comfortable? Does that person not look comfortable? What's the difference? Because as an audience member, I'm being guided by this comedian on stage. And your personality and your persona and your confidence is what's leading the show. Jokes are, you know, it's like half and half. Mm-hmm. So you can have a great joke writer, but if you can't perform and you're uncomfortable on stage,
right.
Forget about the jokes.
Yeah, to me, the hardest thing is like, I could be funny, but can I repeat that joke as if you've never heard it before
Correct.
And as if I've never said it before?
Correct.
That's the hardest part for me.
So I think what I would say is watch other people and then think about the things that you want to talk about and work, write 1 minute of jokes and just say, I'm going to work on this minute for the next 3 weeks. And go your open mic and record yourself and figure it out. I can't say, you know, the biography thing works for me because I'm gay and I stood out. So there was a lot of explaining to do. If you're not gay or you're just a man in comedy, whatever, you know, it's going to be different rules. So figure out whatever works for you, but just be really conscious and watch other people and see what they're doing and then see how that applies to you.
Be gay. I mean, you tried being straight.
Mm-hmm. Be gay.
If it's a choice, it's a choice.
Right. Go away. You know, first of all, I'm going to do Wendy Williams, but if you want to, you know, first of all, can I just say this?
All right.
How many people come to your home? Okay. I love her.
So you look back at what you've done these last 6 years. You're not necessarily embarrassed about the beginning of your career.
No,
good.
Because I mean, I should be. I had a mullet. I don't even know what I was, a mess. But I think it's so crazy because
you are wearing more tank tops now.
Girl, I'm a thought. This is the only way I'm going to get trade. I feel like the biggest thing is if you want to become a comedian, you have to actually love the sacrifice. You have to love making the sacrifice. When I moved to New York, this is my schedule. I woke up at 5 a.m. I went to work an hour early so I could get out an hour early. I worked my 9 to 5. By 3 p.m., I was planning the open mics that I was going to that night with Evan Williams. And I get out of work early. I meet Evan. I did open mics till at least 1 o'clock in the morning. And I did that every single night for 2 years. I didn't date. I barely drank. I didn't do anything. I just did comedy. My friends were comedians. I was writing jokes. I was going to open mics. I was going to shows. I was meeting people. I just was obsessed with comedy. And now I'm at a point where it's like, okay, I'm not afraid. I'm not going to get booked. And I know how to handle these feelings. So maybe I should consider dating, or go to a drag show or something. But at the time, you have to really love the sacrifice. If you want to do comedy, but also date someone and have a go to a paint and draw and go to join a hockey team or whatever, forget about it. You know, I mean, for me, that it didn't work that way. I couldn't do anything else but comedy. So, and as a matter of fact, work got in the way of comedy. I mean, I would spend all day watching comedians. I would spend all day, you know, you just have to love the sacrifice.
But whenever, yeah, Kemd and I, when we started Keith and the Girl, we wouldn't take, even though we're the only bosses, we're starting something new. We didn't even think we earned days off in the beginning. I couldn't join up.
Exactly. You don't.
Right.
Exactly.
But I wanted to join a hockey team, join the NFL. Mm-hmm. I want to be the top rebounder. But, you know, you got to set your priorities. I see what you're saying.
I think discipline is something that when you start comedy, the community is huge. When you start comedy, there's a million comedians. There's a million open mics. There's a million people to meet. And 99% of them are gone in your life. 99% of those people disappear.
Right.
And only a few continue to rise. And the community around you becomes smaller. So you have to be comfortable having a disciplined life. And the goal has to be the jokes, the comedy, enjoying yourself on stage, and working towards that goal. If the goal is to party, if the goal is because this is a social club, if the goal is because you met new friends, if the goal, those things are great. I met my best friends in comedy, but it's not the main goal. You know what I mean? You can't just, this is not a party. This is work. I'm going to work.
That's right. This is work.
It's a lot of sacrifice. I also came from opera and painting as my background, where discipline was key. And I watched what I needed to do in order to achieve the things that I needed, where I wanted to go. When I saw my friend Marty on stage at the Comedy Bar in Chicago, which was a room full of 100 people, that's all I wanted. And I thought, I just want to do that. I've done the gay clubs. I've dated. I've had sex. I just want to do that. That's what I want to do. So if I want to get there, I have to work hard. You have to love the work is what I'm saying. Yeah. It can drive you crazy. I mean, you have to, you know.
You guys, the lesson is still the lesson from kindergarten. Work hard.
Right. Yeah, and stop picking your nose.
You are
that
right.
That's the number two. I've gotten in trouble. Am I talking too, like, is this too serious? Or
I was hoping we would get to the point where Mateo asks if he's talking too much.
I know, I'm sorry. I literally was like, I'll let you guys lead the conversation. Then I diarrhea mouth.
And that's, you have to work it, and you still are, you see?
I know.
That's right. Well, anyway, you don't have a family, but your career is going great.
I know, I'm wildly single and desperate, but I'm like, work! So.
Mateo Lane, by the way, you brought up art. You are a fantastic artist.
Thank you.
Mateo did the album for, the cover for one of my albums, God Made Me, which later was revamped. On another album cover, Good, Clean, Fun, or vice versa. But anyway, he's fantastic. Find him on social media. Say hi to him. And if you have a chance to see Mateo perform live, you do it. You drop everything and you do it.
You sacrifice your life for my 15 minutes.
That's right.
That's the thing. You're
where I talk about the British bake.
You're one of the comics where, because we get a lot of people through the studio and you could see people's attitudes and you, no matter where you're booked, no matter what you're doing, you bring the show completely. And so you can rely on the fact that if you're on a lineup, there's going to be a show. You're gonna energize the audience. You're going to leave them with something. And if they're not laughing, you will find something that they'll laugh about.
Oh, I'll yell at them. But I do. That is something that I appreciate you saying that, because I am one of these people. If there are four people in that room, I will make it feel like 200. I will go in there. I will talk to those people. I will get anything out of it. I've literally done shows where there's four people and I thought, great, I have new jokes I want to work on. And I walk on stage and say, guys, there's not a lot of us, but I have new jokes. Will you let me know if this is funny to you? And they'll say, yeah. And then I'll just go through my new jokes and work it out with them. And
then they're
it.
Your new best friends.
That's... Okay. Well, I pretend at the time that I ignore them. I run away. I go, I'm afraid of intimacy and I run far away. But, you know, and then there's a room full of 200. Then it's like, great, now I'll do my A material. You know, but, you know, there's so many comedians you'll see who will be like, oh, there's only three people down there. Forget it. And it's like, no, this is a great opportunity. You should be happy that you're on stage at all.
I agree. You see the comedians making the joke about how there's more candles than people. And I'm like, then don't do it. Like, why are you doing it and not doing it
at the
same
time? And those aren't candles. Those are gay men. How dare you?
I don't know what you're allowed to say today. Honest to God. And okay. can I just say a woman looks good? I don't know what to do in this day and age.
The answer to that is no.
Yeah, no, don't.
No. If you're questioning it, no.
I hold up a mirror to women now. I'm like, oh, you see. Okay, you get it.
Whatever you think, I think.
Mateo, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And we'll talk to you soon. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Let's say Seinfeld was on an island and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you